Welcome to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. Coming to you from Radio Fabrique in Salzburg, Austria, this is Kevin S. Fox, your host. In tonight's episode, our 11th, we are out in the field asking questions about the Untersberg, a sacred mountain here in this region that in many ways dominates the visual landscape from Salzburg. Anyone looking south towards the Alps will first encounter visually the Untersberg, known perhaps as a sacred mountain. We want to ask the question tonight, how does this sacred representation of Untersberg enter into our geographical imagination? And perhaps another question, how does this mythological or even mystical understanding enter into the popular imagination? How do we know this mountain as a peak to be climbed, as a force so much more powerful than us, the otherworldly home of Kaiser Karl, as the heart chakra of the world? I bring a few voices to the show today to help translate and interpret this other way of seeing the Untersberg. Returning to the show are Dr. Veronica Della Dora from Episode 1, Keyword Geographical Imagination, a geographer whose research has looked specifically at this, at sacred mountains, and who is going to help us contextualize and situate our discussion within the broader framework of cultural geography. Back to our Matthias Gruber and Eva Kralinger, who, as you will recall, introduced us to the little stories of Salzburg in Episode 4. Now, they drive out with me to Reinhard Limpach's house in Bavaria to speak with him about the Untersberg. They do the translation. Mr. Limpach's a shaman, an alpine shaman, whose work has in many ways made him, as one newspaper calls, an ambassador for the mountain. And I would say an ambassador for another way of understanding our place here north of the Alps and our place in the cosmos. First, as our departure point, and as we are engaged here with cultural geography, let's hear from Veronica Della Dora about how mountains, in general, enter into the popular imagination.
The first step has to do with its physical presence in the landscape, with its prominence, with its visual characteristics, with its oddities, with its peculiarities. There are features that are strange, that stand out of the landscape, that capture our gaze, and as such, they function as magnets for legends and for traditions. And these features very often include mountains. Think, for example, of the dark cone of Mount Athos emerging from the flat surface of the Aegean like a huge pyramid rising for over 2,000 metres. Think of the dramatic pillars of Metera towering over the plain of Thessaly like trees of a giant forest of rocks. Think of the gracious and yet massive cone of Mount Fuji looming on the horizon of the Japanese countryside. All these mountains are unexpected landmarks we encounter on the horizon. We're struck by them because they're different from their surroundings. Now, like us, many generations before us were equally struck by them, and they wondered about their origins.
And it is that wondering about its origins that many times leads us into its mythologies and its sacredness. How does the sacred mountain, then, enter into our popular geographical imagination?
So the first step for a sacred mountain to enter the popular geographical imagination is experiential. The second step, though, has to do with communication or circulation. In other words, how are the stories transmitted from generation to generation? How do they travel across space and time, and how do they change as they move across space and time? Communication can be oral and confined to a tribe or to a village, but it can also extend to a whole nation and even beyond national boundaries. So it is important to remember that mountains are not just static objects. As with any place, they also move around through books, through postcards, through paintings, through songs, and so on.
You're listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. Tonight's episode, we're climbing up the Untersberg, just outside of Salzburg. For more information about the show, check us out on the web at www.geographicalimaginations.org. So let's actually hop in the car and head out to Bavaria to speak with Rainer Limpok, an alpine shaman, whose books and workshops are communicating this very sacredness to a much wider audience. Eva, Matthias, and I met him in his home back in the spring. As a cartographer, I appreciated his suggested starting point, a topographical map.
Okay, this is meine Karte vom Untersberg. This is der Berg und Salzburg hier, Reichenhall hier, Berchtesgaden hier. Das sind so die drei wichtigsten Orte.
Aha.
Und in dieser Karte, die für dieses Buch Magisches Berchtesgadener Land herausgekommen ist, das ist eine sehr gute topografische Karte, sind halt diese besonderen Orte, so wie ich sie erfahre, alle vermerkt mit einzelnen Punkten und auch diese Linien, die haben alle eine Bedeutung. Teilweise ergeben sie sich aus den Sagen, teilweise ergeben sie sich aus der Geomantie. Also allein an der Karte könnte ich jetzt schon sehr viel erklären.
Aber
jetzt
vielleicht mal. The ley line.
Ley line, ja.
Aha.
Aber das sind eigentlich alles, all are ley lines.
The all ley lines.
All, yeah.
All right.
He said that... Hast du die Karten gemacht, oder? Die hast
Nein,
du?
Noch nicht. Das ist eine topografische Karte mit sehr vielen Zufällen verbunden, weil ich habe in Berchtesgaden den Verlag angesprochen und wollte eigentlich ein ganz anderes Buch machen und dann haben die gesagt, na, sie haben eigentlich gerade eine Karte, die sie wieder rausbringen und es ist diese topografische Karte und dann haben gesagt, ja, ich bräuchte eine Karte, wo man diese Orte einzeichnen können und dann haben wir ein bisschen verhandelt und haben gesagt, da machen wir dann ein Buch draus und dann haben wir natürlich genau diese Karte verwenden können. Also das ist eigentlich schon sehr was. Ja, da gibt es glaube ich nicht so viel von diesen Karten im ganzen deutschsprachigen Raum.
That's kind of a unique map in the German-speaking area, because it has marked all the special places, the geomantic place. I don't know how to translate it.
I think vortex is called vortex.
Vortex.
Of energy or power spaces.
Okay, yeah, so this is kind of a really... really unique thing to have a map like this.
Yeah, and just to compare it to the map that I brought, which is really just for hiking, right? I mean, it gives you the same some of the similar information, but here we have a layer then of all of this really great information about energy lines, ley lines. Yeah. Did you make this map? Did you?
No. I make the signs and the lines.
The lines part.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Huh. And for explanation, in the center of the mountain, there's a vortex or the das Energiezentrum des Berges.
Mm-hmm.
And here. Es ist die pulsiert es förmlich und das kann man zu bestimmten Tagen, auch zu bestimmten Tageszeiten erfahren, was da oben von diesem Punkt, was da ausgeht. Das geht so weit, dass also sowohl die Sagen auf diesen Punkt hinweisen und die Menschen, die dorthin gehen, sehr einmalige Erfahrungen machen. Das geht bis in das Thema Wunderheilung hinein. Darf ich das mit einem Beispiel dann gleich erwähnen, was da passieren kann.
Können wir es vielleicht vorher kurz übersetzen, damit er weiß?
Ja.
So this, you see this point here, this is like the energetical center of the mountain, and it's not a coincidence that also not the fairies, but you know,
the legends and myths
take part or there or around there.
Around and now that center point.
Around this center point, and this is the like this energetical center that every like layer that you see here or every. Is pointing to.
When, where is that center? Like where?
In the middle of the mountain.
It's inside.
It's called the Mittagsscharte. Mm-hmm. You know the name? Mittagsscharte?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen it. Mm-hmm.
And this has a very strong power, which can also be that strong that it leads to it can heal your body. And now he's given an example of this healing. Einfach auf Deutsch das Beispiel sagen. He has a concrete example of this happening.
Ja.
Genau.
Okay. Es gibt bestimmte Tage im Jahr, da ist dieser Berg besonders kräftig, besonders stark.
There are certain days in the year where the mountain is very, very strong, or the energy in the mountain is very strong.
Einer dieser Tage ist der 15. August, Maria Himmelfahrt.
And one of these days is August 15th, Maria
Himmelfahrt.
And I've heard people will go sleep there and go want to be there around the 15th of August. Is that true?
Yeah.
In this first segment with Rainer, I wanted to give you a taste of our conversation and here's the way we were doing the translations on the fly. But as we move forward here, we'll hear more and more of Eva and Matthias's voices. But just so you know, this was Rainer speaking to us in the comforts of his living room. And so it's now that we wanted to direct, I think, our questions to this idea of how the sacred then enters into one's own geographical imagination, and how the sacred in some ways grabs Rainer and through his own experience. And so we find out a little bit more about his history with the mountain in this next segment.
He went to this very special center for the first time in 2006 with a group of people.
Okay.
And he had a very special experience there. Just to explain, one time he went there with a friend, and his friend is an IT technician, and he had an illness.
Carpal tunnel syndrome,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
So he couldn't really move his hand anymore.
Right.
It was numb,
right,
or almost numb. And he went there, and another problem was that he was a photographer and he didn't want to take the pictures with an this mode where it's automatic.
Yeah.
But he wanted to do it manually,
right,
because he wanted to have the perfect setting for the perfect picture. And he couldn't do that anymore because of the numb hand. And he went there on the 15th of August, so this is a very special day for the mountain.
Yeah.
And on this day, he went in this cave, which is called the Steinerer Casa.
Casa kann man als Hütte übersetzen.
Mm-hmm.
Hut.
Stone hut. In a very dialectal word.
Yeah. And the stone hut, it looks like a stone cathedral. And in the middle of the when he was inside on the 15th of August, he experienced something very special, because he was trying to take pictures, and he was like, okay, I'm going to take it automatically, but he was not very satisfied with it, so he tried to do it manually.
Yeah.
And in this very moment he figured out that he could do it. And with him there was a befriended doctor from Vienna, and who also said, hey, before the trip, you have to get an operation, you cannot go on like this, because if you don't do anything medically, you will not be able to move it at all. And he showed his hand to the friend and he said, like, look. And the friend didn't know what to say because it was just inexplainable.
Uh-huh.
And this is like one of the examples of this spontaneous healing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But there are a lot more in the region. And during this trip, he took all these pictures. And when Rainer went to this through these pictures, on one of the pictures, he saw a light.
A ray of light.
A very strong ray of light.
This is right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which was clearly not a mistake in the picture, but inexplicable.
Wow. And it's
inexplicable.
Schwarz-Weiß and mm-hmm. Negative.
Black yeah. white and negative.
This is normal. Mm-hmm. You see? It's
yeah.
come from
the rock.
Yes. To the ground. Exact ground.
Mm-hmm.
So probably just to sum up again, so we were talking about this ray of light, which really is not a ray of light that comes from an opening of the cave, but because it looks different. There is an opening of the cave, which you saw, but it's not the same ray of light that they experienced on 15th of August.
Right.
And you can see this energy. When you are a person, you can feel it. Through these spontaneous healings,
mm-hmm.
but if you use a technical instrument like a camera or something like that, you can see it really on the picture. So this is what a technical instrument makes it look like this ray of light. And when you're a person, you cannot see it, but you can feel it. And there is another important day for the Untersberg. It's the 1st of November, which people wouldn't recommend to go there.
Right.
Everybody knows it.
Particularly the old people here know that you don't go up the mountain on 1st of November. Maybe the younger don't remember, but the old people know that it's a taboo to go
mm-hmm.
there.
Yeah.
But he has a friend, a woman who really knows the mountain and has a good relation with the mountain and knows what she's doing. So she made it up there, even though there is already snow in this special season and stuff. So she went up there and she's talking to the mountain. She has a good relation to it. And she went to this cave and she made a little ritual, like Räuchern, you know, when you're
burning stuff
like this. And she took pictures as well. And you could also see this ray of light on the 1st of November. So it's not a coincidence that it was on the 15th of August, but also on this other day where people are not recommended to go there.
You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. Geographical Imaginations is a radio essay program that broadcasts from Radio Fabrique in Salzburg, Austria, on the fourth Saturday of every month. Each episode, we explore a theme or perhaps a question with a variety of different texts and voices and bring it together to produce new geographies, new public geographies. For more information about our show, check us out at www.geographicalimaginations.org.
So I think it's important to know what's your personal relationship with the mountain. Was ist sozusagen, der Kevin hat gesagt, es gibt so eine starke Verbindung offenbar zwischen den Menschen und dem Berg. Und er würde eben interessieren,
und
was...
dem Geben und dem Nehmen, auch in Bezug auf Natur und auf den Berg.
So ihn würde interessieren, was du für eine persönliche Beziehung eben hast zu diesem Berg. What's your personal relationship to the mountain?
Mhm. Also mir ist über die Jahre bewusst geworden, dass ein Begriff, der im Zusammenhang mit diesem Berg immer wieder auftaucht.
Personal relationship with the mountain, you probably can sum it up in one word, it's a mirrored world, you know, like it's a mirror. It's and it gets very obvious. When you go there, and there are a lot of incidents there. For example, like also people talk about it in a very legend dairy way, the dwarves and the giants and stuff. So there's a lot of myth around this mountain. And if you really go there and you let yourself, like,
if you open to the experience,
if you open up to this experience, to this mirrored world, the mountain is confronting us with its own being, its own personality, and this goes so far that you can meet the love of your life on the mountain, or you can see your dead uncle there again, or you get confronted with very dark stories that happen on the mountain, and which is a very difficult topic.
Yeah.
And if you open up to this experience, the mountain allows you to see in your own soul, and probably also a little bit the future of your soul, and therefore a little bit in your own future. So
I guess the question is, why there? Why Untersberg? Like, what's why there and not the next mountain down the way?
Untersberg ist ein heiliger Berg.
There is a pilgrimage every year on the 14th of August, so very close to the 15th of August, and people walk around the mountain. And the idea behind it, it was explained by a priest, is to set free the souls which haven't on their way to the light, or whatever you may call it. And this is something that doesn't only happen on the Untersberg, around the Untersberg, but also around the Kailash. I'm sorry. So to go back to the beginning, why is the Untersberg so special? The Untersberg is a holy mountain, and a long time ago all the mountains were holy to the people, which was kind of forgotten nowadays. But if you want to have a chart or something like a hit parade of the holy mountains, Untersberg is very much on top of it, together with a few other mountains. And these are all mountains that have a very special relationship to the continent they're on and to the people on this continent. And so this is one side. It's this Untersberg is also referred to as a heart chakra, while another mountain I don't remember is as a crown chakra. And then there is another side, which is more a scientific side. If you look at the anomalies in the magnetic field of the Earth, you can see that you could map it if you want, and you could see where these anomalies happen. And there's a very big one which is kind of around the Untersberg area. So you could also measure that. You could see it in a scientific way, and so this could have something to do with it, although he says it's more speculative on our basis of what we know today. So this is the scientific side, we have this holy side, and then again we have this more religious side, if you want to say, with the pilgrimage and stuff.
Right. And the pilgrimage, does it go on the bottom of the mountain around?
It's on the bottom.
From
clockwise?
From church to church.
Oh, from church to church. Alright. Does it go
clockwise? That was an important hint, that it was clockwise and not the other way
so
around.
Clockwise would be, okay. So Berchtesgaden, Bad Reckenhall, Glanning, that way.
Also, it's probably a coincidence, but at like the pilgrimage around the Kailash, Mount Kailash, takes about 50 kilometers, which is about the same distance that you go around the Untersberg.
Yeah.
So this as well is a coincidence, probably, but
it's interesting.
Yeah.
I've looked at that. I like to do these walks, and one of the walks I was looking at doing was around Untersberg. And it's about the exact distance of a marathon, or it's a little bit longer, I guess. But some people do actually do this as a pilgrimage.
Mm-hmm. Almost on 14th August, you must go with the pilgrim.
I will.
Yeah. Okay.
On the 14th.
Yeah.
Where do they start? Yeah. Where?
At Grossmain.
Grossmain. Okay. Yeah.
So you will be there.
Yeah.
You are listening to Geographical Imaginations, brief expeditions into the geographies of everything and nothing. For more information about the show, check us out on the web at www.geographicalimaginations.org. If you'd like to leave a comment, go to our comment section and tell us something about the episodes, what you think, and maybe even suggest a future episode. Thanks for listening. Let's get back to today's show.
A mountain can become sacred through direct experience, through events like divine manifestations, through association to holy men, or they can be built on purpose. And scholars from different disciplines, including geographers, are interested in these processes of sanctification. I would say that cultural geographers in particular are interested in mountains not so much as fixed geological features, but rather as forms that are continuously inscribed and re-inscribed with meanings, including sacred meanings. So the sacred is something we normally associate to the divine. It is something that inspires a sense of awe and reverence. But more fundamentally, I would say the sacred is something distinctive, something different from the ordinary, something to which we ascribe a special meaning, a strong meaning. So a mountain is considered sacred because it is ascribed a special meaning by a certain group of people. The question though is, how does this happen? How does the mountain become sacred? Mountains, if you want, are the most durable, the most prominent of all geographical features. And in fact, the very word prominent comes from the Latin word mons, which means mountain. Some mountains cause breaks on our visual horizon. They stand out, they're distinctive from their surrounding landscape. And as such, they have long captured the human imagination. Mountains, one could say, join earth and heaven. They inspire a sense of awe. And as such, they have entered the cosmological schemes of many different cultures. So, for example, think of Mount Olympus, the highest mountain in Greece, and the throne of Zeus, and home to the 12 divinities in ancient Greece. For the Navajo tribe, if we move to North America, four peaks located in Mexico, Arizona, and Colorado mark the limits of their ancestral land. They mark the cardinal directions of the cosmic system. And again, if we travel all the way down to New Zealand, we find that the Taranaki tribe on the North Island of New Zealand centers its existence around a mountain that bear the same name, Mount Taranaki. And this mountain is deemed to be sacred because it is the origin of all the rivers that flow into the valley. So it is also the origin of life for this tribe. And the same can be said about Kilimanjaro and the Chaga people who live on eastern slopes. So these mountains act as access mundi, as pivots around which the world is centered and is organized.
Sitting in Reiner's living room, I couldn't help but think how much of a teacher he is and how deliberate and well thought out his responses were. Difficult for me, not speaking German, but with the translation help from Evan Matthias, I still was able to kind of get a sense of the connection that Reiner had with the mountain. I was really curious too then, as this sort of teacher, because he has workshops in his written books, he's widely known in the area, sort of in some ways, you know, what are his goals with that?
Is the aim to really sort of inform people, educate people, get them to understand this mystical layer even more, because it's important.
Du machst Workshops und Kurse, du schreibst Bücher. Ist dein Ziel, dass die Leute besser verstehen, was da unter dem Berg ist? Oder was ist sozusagen dein Ziel dabei? What's your goal in this workshop?
Also das Ziel dabei ist sicherlich, diese Sprache der Natur wieder zu erlernen. Wobei ich auch das Gefühl habe, ich kratze da ein bisschen an der Oberfläche. Ich habe vor kurzem auch wieder von jemandem so mitgeteilt bekommen, und das Gefühl habe ich alle, die sich...
To learn again or to study again the language of the nature. Mm-hmm. But when he's doing that, he's very on the super...
He knows that he's only scraping on the surface, there's much more than he can
superficial,
see, but
yeah.
he's trying to relearn it.
Because the problem is that during all these thousands and thousands of years, or hundreds of years, that we haven't been really in touch with nature, we lost a little bit the knowledge of it and the knowledge of how to talk to it and how to feel it and hear it.
Right.
And this is why he wants to teach again or learn again the language to get in contact with nature again. And he wants to, in his workshops and books and stuff, he wants to get into the topic what's the significance of this myth or this mirrored world, and how to relearn the language that we lost. And he sees in shamanism, he sees a good way, because everything has a soul, and the mountains are the oldest souls, because they have been here long before the people, long before the animals, and long before the plants. And they not only are they are the oldest souls, but also the biggest, because of their
the immense size.
Their size, yeah. And
they can tell us a lot about about life, and they can tell us a lot about our own problems, because they're pretty wise, if you want to say so. They've seen a lot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
So, and to learn again, to listen to them, can help us in our own lives. Yeah.
Right.
If I was, I think, as a cultural geographer, and one of the things I've been really interested in is the calendar as a marker, as an indication of how popular something is, or how important something is to the popular imagination. That if something enters into our normal calendar throughout the year, whether those are feast days, and we're talking about Maria, the Assumption the Assumption of Mary for August 15th, these are dates, no doubt, sort of made important by the Catholic Church over the centuries, and especially here in this region, the Catholic Church having a very wide influence, and not just in the past, but currently as well. But in order, I think, for something to enter into our time, it has to, I think, stay on a calendar in some ways. And that's one of the things that I think makes the Untersberg important, is that it is connected to certain dates. And we find out more right now.
And there are 2 days in the year, the 21st of June and the 21st of December, but we now started with the 21st of June, where you can see really great phenomenon, like events of nature, you know, like really something that you haven't seen, cannot see a lot of times. And if you're in the cave, in this cathedral, stone cathedral on the 21st of June, you can experience this phenomenon, because normally this is the time what we talked about the summer Sonnenwende. Midsummer.
Yeah, midsummer. It's around midsummer.
Solstice, yeah.
Yeah. And we already learned before that there is this little hole in the cave, and when you are there at midday on the 21st of June, this is very strong, because this time of the year this is like the very strong light. And he went there once at this time, and it was a really great experience being there, and they went in this cathedral and they burned know what, like, you know, in the spirit
ritual
right. burning and it was a lot of smoke already in there, and then the sun came in and it felt like you could touch the sunlight. And for people of former days, this was something that, you know, for us you can explain it, but for them it was just the mountain of wonder, like this wonderful mountain.
And
he focused on the term being enlightened by the mountain from above, through this hole in the mountain where the light comes down, and you can really, like on the picture that he showed us, feel the light and touch the light, and this is like this very enlightening moment for people.
And although you can explain it scientifically, because it's just sunlight, for him it felt like really strong when the sunlight touched him. Yeah.
Okay.
For him, the 21st of December is even more important, because you have to know, 21st of June, it's summer, people have to eat and stuff, everything's fine more or less, whereas in winter this was kind of the darkest phase of the year, so for people this was really a day of hope and everything. And there's an interesting phenomenon on the 21st of December. It's at Großgmain. You have to go to a normal field, more or less. There's nothing special there. But if you look at the Lattengebirge, which is the mountain on the opposite side of Untersberg, you will see a hole. And at this very day, the sun is shining through the hole. And he's almost certain that the people of ancient times went there on 21st of December to celebrate the new beginning and the hope and everything. And within the last years, as well, because of his books and because of the knowledge he gathered in his books, this is getting more popular again. And last year, more around 100 people went there to pray and to sing. The year before, the last year, people went there to sing and pray and just be happy that, like, to feel this very particular moment.
Yeah. So it seems, you know, he talks about the. You're talking about the sites in your books and in your workshops, and so is that you're encouraging people to go, but is there advice that you would give to someone who wants to experience something there, but also to be respectful and also to be mindful, I guess, of what it is they're going to? And I guess the other part of that question is there a site that he would recommend, say, if I was to go?
Okay, so he wants to recommend three places instead of one, but he would not recommend the cave that we have been talking about, because it's kind of difficult to reach, and you cannot be afraid of heights and stuff, so it's really difficult to go there. But there are several other places where you can feel the mountain without going there, without going there physically. Actually, that's the second question.
I'm
starting with the second question. Fine. What are the sites? The first one is in the Almbach Klamm, which is in the south of the mountain, which is very easily accessible. And the place is called Edelmeier Madonna.
Irlmeier.
Irlmeier, okay. Irlmeier. Irlmeier Madonna. And there are healing...
There's a spring that has healing water, healing power.
And it's very uncommon that you find a Madonna around this area. So there's a long story to this why the Madonna is there, but you didn't want to get into that.
Yeah.
There is no official way, path to go there, but you can get together with the person who is in charge of this place. Which is described in the book very, But the person who is in charge of this place says that you have to be very courageous to go there, because when you go you take this path, there are some places which is not very easy to accessible, but you can make it, and it's a pilgrimage place, so you will not be alone.
Mm-hmm.
When you go there,
yeah.
And it's on the foot of the mountain, it's a very calm place, and you can go there to seek, to talk to the mountain, to the water, to the nature. So that's the first place. The other place is on the other side of the mountain, which is in Großgmain, behind the church of Großgmain, and it's called Marienheilgarten.
The picture, yeah.
Yeah. And there are 14 stones that actually are the equivalent of the 14 energetical lines that we saw on the map earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And the place has been created by the priest of the church, which is kind of
interesting. Yeah.
And you can just go there by car, so it's really easy to access. You have a parking place there. Mm-hmm. You can just go behind the church, and there are brochures or the book as well, and then you can read everything. And there is as well this source with healing water,
mm-hmm.
The stones that are very energetical, and the priest, of course, as the person. And for the first question, the tips that he could give to someone how to approach the Untersberg and the places on the Untersberg, you don't have to go on the actual mountain, because in his workshop they sometimes or always get in this trance, shamanism trance,
mm-hmm.
To get in contact with the mountain in this kind of way, because there are some people that have so much respect for the mountain that they would not stomp all over it and go up the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a different aspects to get in contact and through this trance. And it's the easiest way, of course, because you don't have to get into physical action. They do it in their workshops, and and you can. There are three techniques to get in contact with him. It's the prayer, it's meditation, and the shamanism trance.
Mm-hmm.
So you can also go there without really going there, but getting in contact with the mountain through this energetical field.
Right. So as this show is a little bit about field work, and one of our methodologies, I think, that's real important is walking. I take the advice and the recommendations from Rainer Limpach, as he described ways to better connect perhaps with the mountain. And as a walker myself, and having thought about walking around the Untersberg, thought this the perfect opportunity. I met the group at 4 a.m. In Großgmain, the group that was going to and that did walk around the Untersberg. And I'd like to share, I guess, a little bit with you some of my field notes from the day.
Today, August 14th, walking the Marian pilgrimage, tomorrow being the Assumption of Mary. And today, the local community here in Greater Salzburg in a village or town called Gros Main. The parish there, the parish priest, at least over the last 20 years, and I believe it's a revival of something practiced much earlier, but a somewhere between 45 and 50 kilometer walk around the circumference of the Untersberg, the mountain that sort of dominates the landscape, visually dominates the landscape in Salzburg, but also I think dominates the local lore, and fits into this sort of imagination that we might have about the sacredness of mountains. And it's not just fitting, it's, I believe, you know, people really are living as a connection and in dialogue, perhaps, with sort of a mystical, perhaps, dialogue with the mountain. And we walk today in sort of a Catholic formation, in the sense walking from church to church, the churches that are... So we walk today in this sort of maybe a Catholic formation or Catholic way of going from church to church. But I believe in some ways the practice of this is really rooted in a broader sort of spirituality that allows this, I don't know, the idea that Untersberg could be sacred, and it allows for that. So we walk clockwise. We started in Gros Main, made it to Fürstenbrunn for breakfast at the parish, and then Grodig. We stopped in at a church there, and then I believe it's Mark Schellenberg, which is in Bavaria, knowing that Untersberg itself is split in half. It's right on the border of Bavaria or Germany and Austria or Salzburg land. And we are continuing to go this clockwise formation in sort of the back road right now in the woods, and we'll make it to Berchtesgaden pretty soon.
Of course, pilgrimage continues to connect people to sacred mountains. Indeed, certain holy peaks come to life precisely through pilgrimage practices and through sacred rituals. For example, during feast days of saints, to whom chapels on the top of those mountains are dedicated. I'm thinking, for example, of Kirkpatrick on the western coast of Ireland. Kirkpatrick has been a site of pagan pilgrimage since the 3rd millennium BC, and today it is a site of Christian pilgrimage associated with St. Patrick, who fasted on the summit for 40 days back in the 5th century. So every year, on the last Sunday in July, thousands of Catholic pilgrims climb the mountain. In the Roman Catholic tradition, the journey is as important as the final destination of the pilgrimage. The pilgrim is focused on a locality, and yet he seeks an absolute. Being a pilgrim has the function to activate a permanent condition of pilgrimage. It has the function to unsettle the pilgrim, to set the pilgrim in a stable state of instability. The pilgrim learns to be constantly on the move, so that the whole of his life becomes a pilgrimage. The call of the pilgrim is to access a place that is sacred, a place that was ordinary, but what the sacred has manifested itself in some way, and therefore is no longer ordinary. It has become something else, something completely different, while still remaining itself. It still remains part of the landscape. And the pilgrim looks for the same kind of transformation. On the top of a mountain, the pilgrim can put life into perspective. And in fact, as shrines are located in often demanding places, in high places. To reach such a higher ground requires a spiritual detachment as much as a physical effort, the challenges of the material journey. And this is how the holy and the wild blend into one another. The journey to the mountaintop also entails a sense of solidarity with other pilgrims, the creation of a community, of mobile community. So while pilgrimages help people connect with the mountain, we could say, helps connect people with each other.
Thanks for listening tonight. It's been an interesting episode to put together. I'm glad, and I thank the different voices, the different people that volunteered their time. As always, to Dr. Veronica Della Dora, thank you for your keen insights. And I want to thank again Eva Kralinger and Matthias Gruber, who've collaborated on the show before, and hope for continued collaboration with them in my time here in Salzburg. And to Rainer Limpok for opening his home, really, to us for a very long discussion. We've used quite a bit of it here, but certainly a longer discussion about the Untersberg. We certainly learned a lot from him. Lastly, to the group, in some ways remains anonymous in a pilgrim way, a group of pilgrims about, I don't know, maybe about 40 people who walked around the base of Untersberg on August 14th. And I thank you for sharing your time and your words with me as we walked through the heat of an abnormally hot August day here in Salzburg. So without anything else, just thank you again for listening and look forward to our next episode next month. Que les vaya bien. Ciao.